TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this morning at www.tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is, and you'll be hearing from producer Remus later on in the broadcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website. With all your latest Winnipeg Jets news and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, game after game, it's been the biggest game of the Jets season. Mm-hmm. Today is another one of those biggest games of the Jets season.
Today is the biggest game of the Jets season, Drew. They are finally facing a team that's right ahead of them. You know, you played Philadelphia, you play Florida, you play Buffalo. Those teams are behind you. Mm-hmm. This is a game where a team is ahead of you, and we'll talk about it throughout the show, but the Jets actually control their own destiny now. They can win out and make the playoffs. So they don't need to win out in regulation and make the playoffs, and they don't need any help.
That's right. You take care of your own business. The math is simple. They spent the last five games.
Or overtime.
They spent the last five games getting to this point where they now control their own destiny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it shouldn't have been that difficult given that, you know, they won five in a row, and usually you win five in a row in the NHL and you gain some significant ground, except for the fact that all the teams ahead of them didn't lose a game, or they barely lost a game. Right. So the Jets, it was a struggle, but they got it done, and now they control their own destiny. Well, Ezzy, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. I mean, we were talking about this last week, and it was all about, well, if the Jets beat the Lightning, if the Jets beat the Hurricanes, and the week before that it was, well, if the Jets beat the Panthers, well, they've miraculously won five games in a row, mm-hmm. and that's incredible. And even if they don't end up making the playoffs, winning today, you know, they have really turned it on at the right time, and this has been extremely impressive. And we've said, you know, all these games are big games, but this is the biggest game to date this year, and each game after this game will be the biggest game of the year. But really, the reason why it's so important is because you've got the Islanders coming in, and they can really do double damage. They can put the Leafs into the playoffs with a win, and they can also pretty much separate themselves from the Jets mm-hmm. with a win. If the Islanders beat the Jets, well, mathematically, we're not catching them because then they would be 5 points ahead of us. And realistically, it's the Rangers that we're catching right now, tied in points, same amount of games remaining. But this is a game where you have to win in order to set yourself up for success because you've got the back-to-back games against Buffalo, and you've got the game against the Capitals, and you have to expect that the Jets probably won't win the last four games, even though they've won these five games. It's a tall task to finish the season with nine straight wins. You know, it's doable, but you know, this is a game where you've got a team coming in. You know, you've been successful at home, and you can really put damage, you know, into the Islanders, and you can really hurt the Leafs as well. But you know, This is an incredible opportunity for them. A couple of weeks ago, everyone was writing the Jets off, saying they had to go 7-2, and you know, there was a reason for people to write them off, Richie, but they've put themselves in a position, as you said, they control their own destiny, and they have a good chance of making the playoffs, slight chance of even winning the division.
Yeah, they have a chance of making the playoffs. Is it a really good chance? I don't know. I mean, the Rangers are 2 points up, Ezzy, on the Jets,
sorry, yeah,
with the same amount of games played.
Right.
The only team that hasn't played as many games is Ottawa. They're not catching, and Boston because of this recent tragedy. The key also is that the Jets' best chance to me is make, you know, because you're playing Washington, is making it to the third seed now because of Washington's loss to Ottawa and Washington's fairly difficult schedule. Ooh, and of course, the thing to note is if you do make the playoffs, taking out Washington, well then hold on a second, you're playing a home series,
mm-hmm.
conceivably against Ottawa or Toronto or the Rangers or the Islanders. And, I mean, then you're looking like, wow, I mean, this is an opportunity to win. If you sneak into the eighth spot, you're playing Pittsburgh. The joke amongst us is that you're losing three.
Right.
Because Pittsburgh's just too good. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot on the line here. Are they going to get help? I mean, I think what you're seeing is a bunch of teams have packed it in. I mean, you watched the Rangers-Buffalo game last night. Like, you tell me Buffalo didn't pack it in.
Well,
I mean, it's a joke. 6-0 in the middle of the second period.
The fact that Buffalo was even still, I mean, had somewhat of a playoff shot entering into last night's game was somewhat amazing.
That says more about parity and a lack of quality of play than anything else to me.
Right. I mean, Buffalo, I believe, is mathematically eliminated at this point in time. The best that they can get up to is 50 points. In the Eastern Conference,
they are out.
Yeah, they only have 3 games remaining, so the best they could get up to is 50 points. But they've only got 13 regulation or overtime wins, so that should tell you all you need to know about the Buffalo Sabres.
There's only 9 teams left, Ezzy, in the race for the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, New Jersey still is mathematically alive, but let's be realistic. They're not.
They're not.
I mean, so there are 9 teams battling for the 8 playoff spots in the Eastern Conference, and you know, you look at the schedules and you look at, you know, who controls what. And I mean, the Jets certainly, they've played the last 5 games to get them back into this position, the position to control your own destiny.
But you look at the last 4 games, and I know they play Buffalo, as far as I'm concerned, mailed it in. But 3 of these games are against teams that are above them in the standings.
Sure.
And on this run, they haven't played any teams that are above them on the standings.
Right.
So the Islanders are better.
Yeah.
Montreal's better.
Mm-hmm.
Standings-wise. Now, Montreal's clearly a better team.
Right.
Islanders, you could debate. And Washington, you could debate, but they're ahead of them in the standings. So it's not as easy. And you're playing 2 road games. It's easy. It's not. It's far easier to win at home, regardless of the Jets' home and away record this year. It's fairly similar. But it's a lot easier to win at home, especially this time of year, than it is on the road.
Well, if you look at the 2 teams that we're talking about in question, the 4 teams, I mean, if you want to put Ottawa in there, I probably wouldn't. But you're talking about the Islanders, the Rangers, the Jets, and the Capitals. I mean, we'll get into this a little bit later, but... the Capitals arguably have the hardest schedule, and you know, as far as I'm concerned, you're right, Richie. I forgot that ugly win yesterday. The Jets are 2 points behind the Rangers, and to me, a real big help for the Jets would be the Devils, who play the Rangers twice.
Exactly.
And the Devils have the opportunity to really spoil the Rangers' season. And don't think that they don't want to do that, because
sure,
the Devils have had an extremely disappointing season. You mentioned that, Drew, too. They're 6 points back. 6 or 8 points back.
Mm-hmm. Devils are 8 points back.
The Devils are 8
points back after yesterday.
Yeah.
So they beat the Flyers in their last game, but then the Rangers are now 8 points back. So they're out. They're not. The Devils are not getting 8 points, picking up 8 points. So they have an opportunity.
Picking up 8 points while nobody else picks up 1 point.
Right.
I mean, it's not realistic.
So the Devils have an opportunity tomorrow afternoon, and then next week, the last game of the season against the Rangers, to really take away 4 points from them. Now, they've got other easy games against the Panthers, the Hurricanes, and the Sabres, Richie, but the Devils have a great opportunity to help out the Jets. I look at the schedule, and I don't see any opportunity really, you know, aside from that. I mean, the Jets, sure, they can make the playoffs by winning the Southeast Division. That's going to be tough. And then you look at the Capitals, they play the Canadians,
the Rangers have the easiest schedule remaining. I know that the Devils want to play spoiler in the rivalry, and you never want your biggest rival to, you know, make the playoffs against you specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you told the Rangers that your last 4 games of the year are against, you know, the Devils twice, Florida and Carolina, you'd say, if we don't make the playoffs, there's something seriously wrong.
That's why Washington's the best bet right now, because of the fact that you play them once, and they play against other teams that are pretty good.
Right. I mean, Washington's got Montreal tonight in Montreal.
Not easy.
Not easy. The Jets have played Washington tough in Washington, and then they finish at home against Ottawa and Boston. Now, Boston is sort of a wild card because their schedule's obviously been just turned on its head and turned upside down, so you don't really know at this point, you know, what Boston's going to need to play for or anything along those lines.
Never an easy game, though.
Never an easy game, because they're Boston. You look at the Islanders, and the Islanders' schedule and what they don't have going for them. I mean, they have 4 games against teams that are below them in the standings. Obviously, today against Winnipeg, and then they play Carolina, Philly, and Buffalo. All on the road.
Yeah,
but the Philly and Buffalo games, and I probably read too much into this, the Philly and Buffalo games are the last home games of the year for both Philly and Buffalo. So, you know, sometimes you would sort of think that those teams might want to put on a bit of a performance, a good performance, to end the year at home for their fans.
Maybe.
And their back-to-back games.
I'm more intrigued by the fact that it's still possible to see Montreal-Toronto playoff series, but also a Pittsburgh-Washington.
Well,
if the Capitals stand up at 8.
If you're sure. I mean, with Ovechkin playing the way he is. I mean, yeah, that would be tremendous. That would be absolutely tremendous if Crosby against Ovechkin. I mean, this is, you know, quote unquote, the old Ovechkin back playing at that level. And I mean, I think the head coaching matchup there would also be fascinating between Adam Oates and Dan Bylsma. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, Adam Oates has really proven in his first full year as an NHL head coach his bona fides.
Yeah, he's really turned that team around. That team is far different than they were earlier in the year, 8-1-1 in their last 10. But you look at the last 10 record for everybody. You know, the Rangers 7-2-1, the Islanders 7-1-2, the Capitals 8-1-1, and while the Jets have won 5 in a row, the Jets' last 10, 5-5.
Guys, we haven't even really talked about the kind of middle pack of the Eastern Conference. And, you know, Pittsburgh's winning the Eastern Conference. That's the only thing that's certain right now. Mm-hmm. But you've got the Bruins, who can still finish second and get home ice throughout. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're hopefully going to have Jack Edwards on.
We are. I spoke to Jack this morning. He'll be joining us from Boston coming up in about 20 minutes' time.
So we're going to have him on. And, you know, we're very happy to have him on because the Bruins and the Penguins, of course, play today at 11:30 in the morning. But you have a situation where the Bruins need that win, right? So they want to finish second. And then you have the Leafs, who are now, you know, in danger of not finishing fifth, and they're playing the Ottawa Senators tonight, who are trying to catch the Leafs for fifth and potentially get a more favorable matchup in the first round. Mm-hmm. So you have some, you know, drama and intrigue in every single place except for maybe first, because the Penguins have got first locked up, but all the other positions are you know, up for grabs. So it's interesting, you know, there might only be one team that's kind of on the outside looking in, but all those other positions are, you could see, you know, maybe the Senators move up as high as fifth. You can see the Islanders, you know, move up maybe. So it's going to be very exciting.
It's going to be a thrilling final week, absolutely. You know, if, I know it's not going to happen, but if the Leafs somehow manage to collapse and lose out,
it's not going
to
happen.
I know it's not going to happen, but would the country declare a national holiday if they collapsed out, if they lost out and didn't make the playoffs?
It's like the Toronto media, some of them actually want it to happen. They keep talking about the possibility. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's not realistic by any stretch of the imagination, but they have looked. They're playing their worst hockey of the year, but they're not going to play. I mean, you know, you play your worst hockey of the year for 3 games. Maybe 4 games, and you steal a point somewhere along the way, and you're fine.
Everybody's looking to write up every you know, that team right now, and Randy Carlyle is a good enough coach that I would expect to go for the playoffs.
It's like their last game. They lost to the Islanders. The Islanders have been beating everybody.
Right.
I mean, it's not like the Leafs are losing to the bottom seeds here. They lost to the Islanders, who are fighting for their playoff lives. It's pretty ridiculous. I think the chances of the Leafs not making the playoffs are very, very slim.
6-3-1 in their last 10, is it?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not like, you know, a couple losses here, let's relax. I mean, I know everyone out west here wants the Leafs to always be in a state of constant misery. But, you know, they're going to make the playoffs for the first time in 10 years. It's great.
It's also better for it's better for hockey. I mean, as much
for
as
sure it is.
To have the Leafs as a good team.
Four Canadian teams in the playoffs in the East. I certainly didn't think that was going to happen.
No.
And I don't think a lot of people did.
May not.
Well, possibly, I meant.
Yeah.
But three,
but if you get five, if you get 5 out of 7 Canadian teams into the playoffs, which is certainly realistic right now, with the exception of Alberta, where there'll be a national day of mourning, you know, first of all, the television broadcasters are going to be over the moon happy. That's why we're going to talk to Bruce Daubigan about that coming up towards the end of the show. But, you know, 5 out of 7 Canadian teams in the playoffs. Boy, these playoffs are going to be fun in that case. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus over to the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jets talk coming up starting at about 8:40, 8:45 all the way through. We preview the Jets Isles. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or dine in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been your deli destination for nearly 30 years. Check out their website at bernsteinsdeli.com, now open on Sundays at 9 a.m. Gentlemen, moving over to the Western Conference playoff race. You know, the Columbus Blue Jackets just keep getting it, you know, done on the road. They did lose, you know, their last game on the road.
Uh-huh.
But they are still in the 8th playoff spot in the Western Conference. Granted, they only have 3 games left, and Detroit is 2 points behind them with two games in hand.
Yeah.
Is it still Detroit's? Does Detroit still sneak in there at number eight over Columbus, in your opinion?
Yeah, they do. And Detroit also has a tiebreaker.
That's right, they do.
You're pretty confident there, Richie. That wasn't even, you didn't even hesitate there.
No, and I know Detroit went in there, and Jimmy Howard wasn't great against Calgary, and Columbus went into Anaheim and got their 2 points and all that. But they lost L.A. the next night. I think it was the next night. If you give Detroit, I mean, you have Mike Babcock, and I like his comments this week. He said, you know, people talk about how we're inconsistent. He's like, we're not inconsistent. We're consistently average. And I like it. It's like last year, and he's like, oh, you know, everybody said, oh, we outshot, you know, you guys outshot Nashville, you should have won. He's like, no, I don't care about that. I care about the score on the scoreboard. I care about what it says, 2-1, 3-1, 4-1, whatever the scores of the game. And I like his perspective on all those things. You watch Detroit. We know they're the puck possession team and all those things, and there's certain matchups that don't suit them that well. I think they'd have a heck of a time playing a team like L.A. in the playoffs. I think even Anaheim with their size and would have some problems. Detroit would have some problems defending. But I do think they're going to get it done here. I think they're the veteran influence in that room. And even the infusion of young talent there with five games and a tiebreaker. I mean, the truth is, if they go 3-2, they'll have 52 points. Columbus, you know, could go 1-1-1, and Detroit would get in. So I do see Detroit claiming that final spot, and if they did claim that final spot, it appears they'd be locked into playing against their rivals, the Chicago Blackhawks.
I agree with you on those comments about Babcock, Richie. The Red Wings have been 500 the entire year, and for them, that's a bit of a departure from you know what they're usually at. But you know, the two games in hand are really going to come back to bite the Blue Jackets here, and that's no fault of their own because they've been playing really good hockey here for a while now after starting off very poorly. But, you know, the Red Wings are, for all intents and purposes, a weaker team than last year. But you look at it, and, you know, a couple more wins at this point, you know, and they're up there with the St. Louis Blues, who I think everyone would agree is one of the dangerous teams in the West who isn't a top seed. So, you know, the Red Wings are in a better position than the Blue Jackets, and starting with tonight against the Vancouver Canucks, and they don't have the hardest schedule. You've got the Kings, sure, they're hard. But you've got the Nashville Predators and the Dallas Stars to end the season, both teams that will most likely miss the playoffs. As far as the Predators go, they're one of the teams that are, you know, in contention for one of the bottom five seeds right now. They've mailed it in big time. So I would have to think that the Red Wings are going to get in, you know, and they're not going to get much help from the Blue Jackets with three games left. They're going to be trying to win those games, obviously. But you know, for me, it's been impressive to actually see the Dallas Stars stick in there. With you know, the moves that they made at the trade deadline, they didn't win last night. But really, they're getting it done with a lot of rookies in their lineup. No Roy, no Yager. So you know, again, it's going to be a very difficult situation in the West for Detroit to get in. But unlike Winnipeg, they don't have the games in hand, or so they do have the games in hand. And you know, it's the middle spots again in the West. The fourth, the fifth, you know, the Kings and the Sharks battling for the middle seeds that I'll be watching. But if Columbus is able to make it in, you're going to have two teams, one in each conference, that everyone penciled, including me, penciled in as the bottom seeds in the National Hockey League. Mm-hmm. Look at any pickup, any guide, or any prognostication before the season started, not just the lockout shortened season, but, you know, the original season. Everyone had the Blue Jackets and the Islanders missing the playoffs and finishing low. And I think that's really impressive. And I think that's one of the great things that's emerged out of the shortened season, that you have, you know, teams that are really outperforming their expectations. I think that's good for hockey.
I think when you look at Columbus, you know, having a chance to watch them play this week, the addition of Gabrick is just night and day.
Yep.
Because that team works so hard.
It's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, works so hard and just can't really score.
Sure.
And
they have somebody that can capitalize on all the hard work now.
But just quick strike offense, the ability to create something out of nothing and score. And he makes other players around him better, sure. But the people talk about the deal and the contract. When you look at that team, his addition is so important. And I think some people understated it at the time of the acquisition, looked at the contract, looked at what they were giving up. The team can afford it. You know, we've had Aaron Portside on this show before. He's talked about Dylan Prout on the back end. Nice-looking player. They have a top six that's solid, a top six that can skate, a top six that can move the puck in terms of their defense. Their forwards work hard. They're the classic three-man units. Nobody on their side from Gabrick is really going to go make you think you're, you know, make you scared if you're defending.
He's the only guy who can single-handedly sort of beat you.
And then, of course,
Brandon Dubinsky, Richie, is another guy that I think has had an underrated season. He's been, you know, one of the guys that's been there the entire year, and he doesn't get credit for what he's done there either. He's not, you know, top 10 in the league in scoring, but he's a guy that, you know, has been one of their top contributors all year.
Yeah, and I think he has like one goal, but you watch him play, and his effect on the game, as you totally agree, is significant. And that's a team that might have been easy to play against in the past. And if you're beating Columbus now, they're no longer easy to play against, and that's an important step. They have three first-round picks this year. Looking at it from the big picture, mm-hmm. three first-round picks, some nice prospects coming through, like Boone Jenner. So, I mean, things are looking up there.
Good, Ryan Murray.
Yeah, Ryan Murray. Good scouting staff. JD is in place. Lukkolainen is there. The guy knows how to draft. Columbus is on the up and up.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you mentioned the Gabrick, and people are like, oh, the contract. Well, the contract's really – take away this year, because this year's almost done. Next year, it's $7.5 million. Fine. But he's a UFA after that, so it's not a long-term hit. There's no such thing as a bad one-year contract, as we've said on this show mm-hmm. multiple times. And they're still well under the salary cap. So if they don't like what Gabrick brings after that, they get rid of him, and it doesn't cost you anything. And you've done something to affect the future outlook for this team.
And the question, you know, you look at the what's been replaced on their team. Was Derek Brassard going to do it? And he's not cheap. I like the trade for both sides, don't get me wrong. But he's not cheap in terms of Brassard, is he? You look at John Moore. John Moore can skate. Is he a big guy? Sure. But they have defensemen on that back end that can do that job already.
And the guys coming up through the system.
And as you mentioned, Ryan Murray, they have him as well. Derek Dorsett, a heart and soul guy, sure. But I'll tell you something about this team. They don't lack heart and soul guys. They lack skill.
Yep. Yeah, when you have an abundance of heart and soul, you trade some and you get skill in return, and that's what they did in this instance. I mean, you just look at the Western Conference. It's going to be, you know, once the matchups are all settled, and that's the part that's obviously still up in the air, is that, and that won't be determined all the way through until the end of next Saturday night's games.
Well, as you mentioned, I mean, the third through sixth seeds are 1 point separating them.
That's right. I mean, you look at, you know, Vancouver. Obviously, Vancouver's pretty much locked into the third seed
yes.
there. They're probably going to win the Northwest Division unless they collapse and Minnesota, you know, streaks out. But after that, 4, 5, and 6, you know, 1 point separates L.A., San Jose, and St. Louis. And, I mean, you know, you want to finish in the 4-5 spot because you want to avoid, you know, sort of, you know, any of the top three teams.
You want to, I mean, yeah, you do. Drew, I agree with that. And San Jose is kicking around in there. But, I mean, if I'm L.A., I'd love to play San Jose, and I'd love to play San Jose being at home. Not L.A. last year proved that they don't need to have home ice advantage to be a successful playoff team because they didn't have it last year and they won the cup. But also, San Jose is a team, to me, on the way down.
Sure.
L.A. would be able to really take advantage of that defense. And I think it wouldn't be one of those series where you feel it after. You know, you play St. Louis, you are going to feel it after. Mm-hmm. You play San Jose, I don't think as much.
Also, I don't think you can overstate. If you're L.A. and you don't have to make that trip in the 7-game series out to the central time zone.
Great point.
All the time, you know, to play against St. Louis or to play against Minnesota. Rather, you're in L.A., and the furthest trip you have to make is back and forth between L.A. and San Jose. That's a huge advantage for a, you know, Pacific Coast team that usually doesn't do very well travel-wise in terms of how it works out for them.
Think about it. You know, as you look at this, if L.A. if the top four teams were to all win in the first round based on the Western Conference standings today, only one team isn't in the Pacific Division.
Chicago Blackhawks. They are the ones who would be doing a lot of the travel, whereas, you know, Vancouver, Anaheim, LA, they're all in and around the same area, the same time zone, so they get an advantage there. Let's go to break. We're going to bring in Jack Edwards live from Boston, and then we're going to get into the Jets Islanders after that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 8:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We go live to Boston, Massachusetts, where we're joined by our good friend. He's the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network, Jack Edwards. Jack, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Well, boys, it's been quite a week, hasn't it?
Well, you said it, Jack. I mean, and you're there and you're on the ground, so we can't even imagine the kind of week that it's been. First of all, everybody's good and safe with you?
Yeah, everybody's good. you know, very fortunate that of all the people I know in the world of sports and all the sports fans, that nobody was near Boylston Street when the bombs went off on Monday. And, you know, luckily I am not directly connected to any of the unfortunates who were injured or killed in the aftermath. So I'm very fortunate that way personally, but we're all in their debt. You know, I don't think any of us ever will forget what so many people have given and how many innocent victims there were of just this horrible, horrible chapter in Boston's history.
Absolutely. Well said there, Jack. You know, I mean, we're not going to spend the whole time talking about it. We'll talk about the Bruins, you know, a little bit. You know, can you just sort of walk us through the emotions of yesterday? I mean, you know, sort of the entire city being locked down and the, you know, stay inside order in place?
Yeah, it was very, very strange. You know, Boston is such a vibrant city. It's so diverse. It's and it's so interestingly active. One of the interesting things about Boston is that even though it's a major city in terms of population, it tends to be rather quiet. But we noticed even on Wednesday, the night that the Bruins did have the game against Buffalo, that people were not conversant in the same way that they normally were. And frankly, the only thing that I had ever experienced that was anything like it was the day after the Olympic bombing in 1996 in Atlanta, where you could tell everyone was on his guard, that everyone was looking at every trash can with suspicion, that everybody was kind of looking out the side of his eyes to see if there was something that might not be normal. And there was no one who was totally on center that day, except maybe members of law enforcement and emergency services who were totally focused and doing their jobs 24/7. It was much that way yesterday, even though there was no one on the street. And even this morning, you know, except for the occasional siren and a little bit of foot traffic, the city's pretty much abandoned. There are a lot of double-parked emergency services personnel and people. Like, I'm near City Hall Plaza right now, and the center sidewalk between the sides of Cambridge Street, which is a main three lanes in each direction thoroughfare, is full of cars that have license plates from all over the eastern United States, obviously regional and federal emergency personnel who've come to Boston and just had to dump their cars anywhere they could when they got here and signed on for immediate 24/7 duty.
Obviously, there's the relief now that this is, you know, the immediate threat of this seems to be over. You know, the emotion, obviously, of the game Wednesday night, and now you got sort of that same emotion that's going to be you know, today during the Bruins Penguins game. You know, how wearing is that, both on, you know, the city, the players, yourself? You know, is it just sort of, or is there a big release off your shoulders now?
Well, you know, a lot of people are very connected to the heritage of Boston and to New England, either directly through their family lines or just having spent most of their lives here. It's hard not to get sucked into it when on a daily basis you walk past the graves of people who changed world history by facing down the English crown in the 1700s, and it does inspire a lot of people. This is the place that had the Minutemen, you know, who were ready to respond on a moment's notice for the better good of everyone, despite the obvious sacrifices that they might have to make. And that is really part of the spirit of Boston. And I'm not saying that it's unique, that there aren't people who do this in every city on Earth, especially in North America, where we've seen so much selflessness in the U.S. and Canada. And I'm not claiming that Boston has a monopoly on that by any means. But part of the character of being a Bostonian is to set your jaw and keep going forward and to make it make you stronger, no matter how much it hurts, no matter how much you have to blink back the tears. And that's the spirit that's in this city right now. And personally, selfishly, I really hope that unknowingly Bruins fans began a tradition on Wednesday night. You know, the seventh inning stretch in baseball started when a U.S. president about 100 years ago went to a baseball game and just casually got up to stretch in the middle of the seventh inning. And, you know, it wasn't planned. It wasn't anything that was orchestrated. He just did it. And in respect to him, everybody in the stands stood up. And from that day forward, it became a tradition in Major League Baseball. I'm hoping, and I have no idea if this is going to happen or not, but I'm hoping that Bruins fans sing the national anthem full-heartedly, and that they learn the words to the Canadian anthem as well, and that when there is a Canadian team visiting, that they sing that full-heartedly too. Because when you stand and sing, it brings you together. It unites your souls. And there is that sense of purpose that that we're really feeling in Boston these days right now, that we're never going to forget the people who died and the people who've been so grievously injured. But we all know that together we have to carry on and that we have to help each other get there.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins, on the New England Sports Network.
Yeah, transitioning to the Bruins, not an easy transition, Jack, but transitioning to the team. Along the same lines of what you're talking about, you talk about the spirit of Boston. Do you see, you know the players, and you've been around the team, obviously, for a long time. Do you see the players kind of taking on that spirit and maybe uniting more than they had? And they're a close team, a close-knit team anyways, but do you see them maybe taking on that cause and playing a little bit harder down the stretch and through the playoffs?
Yeah, this team has been bamboozled by its schedule, and everybody has had an intense schedule this year, so the Bruins don't have a special excuse, and they don't make that excuse for themselves. But when you see against the Canadiens about a week and a half ago and against Buffalo on Wednesday night, an over-the-glass delay of game penalty, and in both games, the Bruins give up a power play goal in the final minute of regulation and lose the game in a shootout. When a pattern like that begins to appear against a team that has led the league in penalty kill all season long, you can easily begin to trace it to mental mistakes. Mental mistakes are more often than not a result of physical fatigue. Whether the players want to admit it or not, they are crushed by this schedule, and all teams are. You know, I'm sure you guys have seen it from the Jets. I'm sure that that even as good as the Penguins have been, that Pittsburgh fans have seen it from them. Teams are making mistakes that they never, ever make when they're sharp. One bizarre possible offshoot of these canceled games this week may be that the Bruins are slightly more rested now than they have been in a long time, and that will allow them to be mentally sharper. You know, I give you a couple of examples, maybe just one to keep it short. But Anton Khudobin on Wednesday night, the Bruins' backup goalie, the Bruins are skating 4-6 because Buffalo has the power play. He makes an easy save on about a 50-foot shot, and St. Ochar is standing immediately to his left, maybe 6 feet away. And instead of dumping the puck out of his glove and giving it to Chara so he can ice the puck or even shoot at the open goal from the Boston goal line, he freezes it and takes a defensive zone faceoff. Buffalo wins the faceoff and goes on to score the game-tying goal. That's just a mental mistake. That's just a silly mental mistake to make. And I think that you've seen more and more of that from every team in the NHL. But, for us, the Bruins get the most attention. So, you know, that's where we see it most obviously, and maybe they're a little bit sharper because of this rest.
Jack, sticking on the ice, the Bruins are going to host the Pittsburgh Penguins in less than 3 hours. There have been reports that Milan Lucic might not play and Carl Soderberg might get into the lineup for his first game. Do you know if that's going to happen and if there are going to be any other line changes this afternoon for the Boston Bruins?
Unless there's something unforeseen, that's exactly what's going to happen. Lucic is going to get scratched, and Soderberg is going to go in, and that's good on a couple of fronts. Number one, it sends a message that nobody's safe. Number two, maybe Lucic gets to see the game from way up above, and he realizes that he has to be better, and he has a little bit more time when he has the puck, and he's got to keep moving his feet. So if you can take notes really quickly, it looks like this is what's going to be the Bruins' lines. Marchand, Bergeron, and Sagan are back together again. When they were right in the middle of the season, they were about as good as any line in the NHL. Daniel Paille is going to get the first chance on David Krejci's left with Nathan Horton right. But we've also seen a lot of Nager and Krejci in the last week or so in different combinations. They've played together on the Czech national team, and they've done some magical things in international play, especially the Olympics. So you might see more of that. But it's going to start out with Paye left, Krejci center, and Horton right. Soderberg in his first North American game, and that's the big asterisk, because he's been a successful player in Europe. But let's not forget that's a 100-foot wide sheet, and competition for the puck is nowhere near what it is in the AHL. Soderberg is going to go with Chris Kelly and Jágr. And then Gregory Campbell, instead of playing center, is going to move to left, because the Bruins feel that Rich Peverly's speed is better served at center than it is on the wing. So Campbell's going to be left side, Peverly center, and Sean Thornton on the right. And then the Bruins are, I don't know exactly what their defensive pairs are going to be, but I would imagine Redden's going to come back out of the game after playing pretty well on Wednesday night. But I don't think he's going to be rewarded for it. I think he's going to come out and Barkowski's going to come back in. But I'll be tweeting it just before game time at Real Jack Edwards. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, you'll see a picture of my chart just before the puck drop.
People should be following you anyways, Jack.
We'll tweet it. We'll tweet it out, Jack. I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned the defenseman there, and before the trade deadline, and you know, coming through the whole season, I thought, you know, Dougie Hamilton's really been an impressive rookie overall. But I thought the Bruins may add somebody to maybe take his spot or at least push him down the depth chart, just because having such a young player in your top four is somewhat risky. The Bruins opted not to add anything. You know, you mentioned Redden, and he played well last game, but nobody really is a top four bona fide NHL defenseman. And then this past week and a half or so, Hamilton's been a healthy scratch a couple of times. Is he really important to how far the Bruins can take this in the playoffs?
Yes and no. He's going to be important because he can give you a little bit of X-factor offense, and he does move the puck pretty confidently and pretty well in the power play. Claude Julien, for good reason, doesn't invest a lot of trust in NHL players who've played fewer than 100 games, and Hamilton certainly fits into that category. Hamilton is learning very rapidly. Everyone is very pleased with his progress. But the fact of the matter is that it's hard to think of a first-year NHL defenseman who could play shutdown minutes mm-hmm. in the most important parts of playoff games and not give people a little bit of a stomachache while he's out on the ice, because it's a matter of experience, of not having seen and been there and done that. And that's simply the case with Dougie Hamilton. The Bruins really, really wanted Mark Streit, but because John Tavares and Matt Molson and Brad Boyes got it going and the Islanders caught fire and found some secondary scoring, Streit was not available, because it looks like the Islanders are going to make the playoffs in the first time since who can remember when. But that was their hope, that they could pick up a guy who could play two-way hockey and also really be an offensive upside, which Streit certainly could be. Just stick this in your cap. Don't be at all surprised if the Bruins really go hard after Mark Streit in the offseason, because he's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Jack Edwards is the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Jack, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Enjoy the game, the Bruins-Penguins, as life sort of returns somewhat to normalcy in the Boston region. And, of course, our thoughts are with yourself and with the entire city of Boston.
Thanks so much, guys. We're the lucky ones when sports is the most important thing in our day, huh?
Absolutely. You're 100% right about that. Take care, Jack.
Thanks.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or find them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Big thank you to Jack Edwards from the New England Sports Network for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, we will have it available both on the TSN 1290 website and on illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, the week ahead for the Winnipeg Jets, obviously they have the Isles today. Mm-hmm. You know, the must-win, I mean, the must-win game. You've won the first five to get you to this point. And, you know, it almost, if you don't win this game, the first five almost weren't worth it. They got four games to go. What's their buffer? Is it 3-0 and 1?
Yeah, that's
it. Is it 4-0? Is it 3-1?
3-0-1, you have to. Probably 3-0-1, Ezzy, just because these teams don't seem to be losing. And they don't really play each other now. You know, Washington doesn't play a team aside from the Jets. That's you know, like they're playing the Rangers or playing the Isles, which makes you worry about the three-point game, but also lets you know that one team won't be getting 2 points. But, Drew, I think it's really interesting to note, obviously, they have to win today's game to me to make the rest of them important, but Monday, Tuesday, Buffalo, Washington. One thing to note, and the Jets have a good road record, but one thing to note, and I'll just tell you right now what the road record is. They are 10-10-2, not bad on the road, you know, a 500 squad, but you don't have last change. The Jets have gone five in a row here, but the Jets have gone five in a row with last change, last, you know, stick down on the faceoffs. A good advantage, obviously the home crowd, which is the better than anyone in the league, you know. So that is going to be something to watch out for, especially against a team like Washington who can throw two lines out at you that can score. Even Buffalo has their guys who can score. So can, you know, if the games get important and you go into that Washington game, the Jets want likely Bogosian out against Ovechkin. But with last change, Washington can dictate. Maybe they want it to be against Buffalo. So that's something to really keep into account. Put under your hat now for if the Jets win, or if they don't win even, the probably games will still be important on Monday for sure. Mm-hmm. If they don't win there, then Tuesday won't be. But that is something you really need to take into account because matchups are so important. And if the Jets make the playoffs, you'll realize how important matchups are. But matchups are even important here, and the Jets are going to be giving up that advantage over the next couple of games.
Absolutely. Ezzy, what do you think? What kind of buffer do they have? Is it 4-0 for the Jets? Is it 3-0-1? Can they actually lose a game outright?
Well, you can go to Sports Club Stats for the numbers, but the Jets have to win three or four of their games. I mean, how many times do we have to say that? But the Jets are in a position where I think the important thing is they control their own destiny. The game tonight, or pardon me, today is obviously very important against the Islanders, a team that they've beat once and then they just lost to about 3 weeks ago. They don't have much of a buffer. I mean, it's obvious whether it's one game or zero games. So they are going to be in a position where they have to win one of those two road games, obviously, in order to win. They're playing at their top speed right now. You can't mention this five-game home winning streak without talking about the top line. I mean, the top line mm-hmm. right now has 30 points in the last five games. And, you know, for all of the people that were complaining, including myself, about the way, you know, the top line was playing, they've turned it up. Andrew Ladd, in my opinion, has got himself in the Hart Trophy talk. He obviously won't be a candidate for the Hart Trophy, but, you know, the guy has been the undisputed
He's the winner
of
the Winnipeg Jets Hart Trophy.
Mm-hmm. Right, so, they have to win all of these games, and they've put themselves in a nice position where they can win them.
Tiebreakers are an interesting thing that we should mention. Regulation mm-hmm. and overtime wins is the first tiebreaker. The right. second tiebreaker is head-to-head. But as Dennis Bayak told me this week, head-to-head, they discount one. If you play, for example, the Jets play Washington five times.
Right.
But because Washington has one extra game at home, or sorry, the Jets have one extra game at home. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
The Jets had an extra game at home.
They discount the first game of the series because they don't want to give the home team an advantage.
Even though that first game was in Washington?
Right. I think they discount the first game of the series, or they take off one of the home games. I'm not quite sure about
Regardless,
that.
Regardless, the Jets don't have the tiebreaker against Washington if it's anything other than regulation and overtime wins.
Right, but it's important to note for anybody they play.
Right.
Even tiebreakers, because that is an interesting one. If you know, what they do is they don't want to say, well, you played three games. They don't want to give a team with two home games an advantage over a team that only had one. So that's something to take into account. If you end up tied on that tiebreaker, The third tiebreaker is goal differential.
Right.
Which the Jets are worst in the Eastern Conference amongst the contending teams at.
Is it just goal differential among the whole year or goal differential against the team they play against? We'll have to check that out. We're not 100% sure on that. We're getting that deep into the tiebreakers. Yeah. It's a confusing situation, of course. But the Jets are in an
entire regular season.
For the entire regular season? Okay. Yeah. If the Jets do have an advantage in that they do have more regulation wins right now than both the Rangers and the Islanders and the Senators, the reason why they control their own destiny is if they beat the Washington Capitals, they'll have more regulation wins than the Washington Capitals.
To clarify, it's the first game in Winnipeg that would be discounted.
The first game in Winnipeg, which was the Saturday afternoon game, I believe, where they lost 3-0, yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Doesn't matter. They don't have any of the tiebreakers besides regulation wins against the Washington Capitals.
Right, because the other two games they lost at home, and they've won once in Washington. If they win another game in Washington, the next tiebreaker is goal differential. Washington's goal differential is +13, the Jets are -12.
There you go. So, I mean, unless they win 26-0, which is unlikely.
That's what Dennis said to me, too.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. Dennis and I are obviously on the same wavelength, so I'm humbled to be in his company, obviously. Anyways, the Jets do have the beauty is that all you ever wanted, all you want in entering the last week of the regular season is to control your own destiny. I mean, that you ask any team, they'd like to be in first place in their home and cooled, but that's not realistic.
Right.
You say to the Winnipeg Jets, you have 4 games left, and you control your own destiny. Every one of the Winnipeg Jets players would take that.
And what's nice, too, is the Jets have shown that they can overcome adversity and, come back from, giving up the lead. They've done that twice in a row. And if you think about it, they've won every way in this 5-game winning streak. They've won in regulation. They've shellacked a team in the Florida Panthers. They've won in the shootout. They've won in overtime. They've won close games. So they're set up very nicely this afternoon, for a really exciting last week of the season. And the Islanders right now are one of the hottest teams in the league. And, they're it's not going to be easy. And it's very likely that, this is going to be a 1-goal game, or it might even need overtime or a shootout. But the Jets have proven that, they're playing their best hockey of the year right now. It's unquestionable.
The giving up of the 2-goal leads, both Tuesday night and then then Thursday night, is that just a sign of immaturity and that you don't know how to put away a team?
Part of it. Part of it is this is what the team is. And I was saying this at the game on Thursday night. This team can't defend well enough to make a big long run. And so what happened at the end of those 2 games, the 3-1 games, it's a team that's not great defensively, showing that they're not great defensively. You might say, why was Byfuglien on the ice near the end of the game to defend? Well, what's the better alternative? The better alternative might be Bogosian, but the goal was scored, I think, with 1:20 left, yeah. So they were probably saving Bogosian for the last shift. This team doesn't have a lot of good defenders. What's happening in those games, the 3-1 leads, is very much what's been happening all year. They blow defensive coverages. They're not tight defensively. And so it is what it is to me. It's not going to suddenly change over the end of the season, and the Jets are going to let it ride here.
They're not going to become a shutdown team at this point in time. I mean, Byfuglien did a great, Byfuglien giveth and Byfuglien taketh away, which was what you saw. He scores the game winner in overtime, but he covers air for the umpteenth time in the last two years as a Winnipeg Jet member, and the Hurricanes tie the game. I mean, how many times have we sat there, and I mean, I was in my seats and I could see it all the way down to the other end of the ice.
Yep.
I could see that Byfuglien is covering nobody. He's not taking the man in front. It's nothing that we haven't seen before. And you just sort of shrug your shoulders and say, that's Dustin Byfuglien right now.
That's exactly it. Well, what else do you want to say? He's not going to change. You're 44 games into the season and many games into his career. What's going to happen now? Is he going to change, especially mid-season or end of the season?
Let's go to break. We're going to start our breakdown of the game. We'll start with the forward groups. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be right back on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time to break down the Jets-Islanders game will be Arthur Staple from Newsday. You can also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Regardless of your talent level or how it happened, If you suffer pulls, tears, strains, or spasms, Elite Sports Injury Clinic is your destination to get you back to health. Three convenient locations throughout Winnipeg means Elite Sports Injury Clinic is always readily available. Check them out online at physiowinnipeg.com. Gentlemen, Jets Islanders, let's start with the breakdown with looking at the forward group for tonight's game. You know, you look at the Islanders and you look at their forward group, and it's hard to say that they're not a one sort of two-line team.
Mm-hmm.
But when that one line is as good and has been playing as well as John Tavares and Matt Molson have, and Brad Boyes has sort of been along for the ride a little bit, you know, how do you know that top line is just going so well for the Islanders? Do you see any signs of it stopping anytime soon?
No, I mean, I think John Tavares is the best player on the ice today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody would really debate that. I think Claude Noel would tell you that if you put some truth serum in him. And you're right, Drew. It's been kind of a one-line squad, but doesn't that sound familiar?
Like the Winnipeg Jets a little bit?
These teams are kind of similar in that way, in terms of the way they're built. You know, kind of one-line squad, some secondary scoring, not a lot of depth on the third and fourth lines, and then a defense that's more offensively gifted than defensively, although nobody on the Jets, well, Hamonic and maybe Bogosian you want to compare. So, yeah, they're very similar squads, and the goaltending can be good, but, you know, there's also periods of time where it's not that good. So I think you're seeing very similar teams at play here. The concern I have, when you're looking at, you know, looking at forwards, the question really is in matchups, and we're going to talk about their defense, but as you're likely going to see the pairing of Bogosian and Klitsam, which is a pairing we saw throughout for the majority of Thursday night's game, up against Tavares, Boyes, and Molson. That line tosses out you some shooting skill, size, certainly. Maybe a little bit of a lack of speed, although Tavares has really improved his skating. They're not going to kill you skating-wise, but their possession on the board is going to be dominant. And I don't think that Byfuglien and Hainsey against them would be a good combination, because Byfuglien loses coverages all the time, and Hainsey along the boards isn't the strongest guy. So Bogosian to me and Klitsam is the line. This is the pairing you're going to see up against the Tavares line. You know, conversely, you're going to see Hamonic and McDonald against Ladd, Little, Wheeler. So whoever wins the first line battle is going to win the game, in my opinion. And so, especially tonight, because these teams are so loaded on these first lines.
Well, you look at the, you know, the secondary lines for both teams. And I mean, obviously, you know, you look at sort of the second line, Evander Kane is the most talented player on both teams aside from their top line.
Yes.
So, I mean, the Jets, we could say, would have an advantage there. The Kane, well, Jokinen and Wellwood line, I mean, which is really just, you know, the Kane line, because Olli Jokinen's been stealing money all year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the sort of the lines for the Islanders line, their second line, you know, Josh Bailey, Franz Nielsen, and Kyle Okposo.
A talented line.
Yeah, and Franz Nielsen, very underrated, and does a lot of the sort of the dirty work very well.
Does.
But then you go further down, and I mean, their third line, I mean, these are, I mean, Michael Grabner, who people remember from the Moose days.
We'll talk about him on the penalty kill later on, very important there. But I mean, Drew, like, out of all the, you know, you talk about Bremenstrom, and he's certainly been leaned on lately.
Mm-hmm.
But Grabner is the best quick strike guy out of the bottom two lines on each squad.
I would agree with that. I mean, and then you look at the, I mean, it's almost like this is as much as this is a one line game. I mean, the fourth lines in this game, there's just nothing there really for either team almost. And I mean,
offensively,
yeah. They'll get their minutes and they'll do, you know, they won't hurt them, you know, either team, but. You know, those are not. It's not really an NHL fourth line on either team. You know, a good NHL fourth line. You know, Casey Cizikas and Eric Bolton and Aaron Gagnon and Chris Thorburn. I mean, guys who they know their roles and they play them well. But there's nobody there that's scaring you by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Drew. But you know, when you factor in John Tavares hasn't been. He's actually cooled down quite a bit, and I think the calling them a one-line team is kind of ridiculous. The Islanders are a very good team. I mean, John Tavares, of course, he's going to be the best player on the ice. But, you know, I think, you know, Michael Grabner, you mentioned, you know, is a guy that has had some success lately. And I think the Islanders are a very hardworking team. And, you know, I think, you know, I don't know if you can really, you know, succeed in the NHL without being a team that can roll out four lines. I think, you know, Brad Boyes has been a guy that's been, you know, a nice turnaround story for the Islanders. And Matt Molson isn't as hot as he was last year. But I think Richie mentioned Zach Bogosian and Grant Clitsam. Grant Clitsam actually led all players in ice time versus their Hurricanes there. And that matchup is going to be very important. But when you look at the Islanders, you know, sure, I guess you can say that the third and fourth lines don't scare you as much, but those guys have gotten points versus the Jets, and a guy like Franz Nielsen has played very well. So even though that number one line is as dangerous, the second line and third line can beat you. And, you know, Evander Kane was hot at the beginning of this homestand for the Jets, but in the last two games he hasn't, you know, been needed as much as far as offensive you know, performance goes because of the first line. So I think that the Islanders really, you know, you have to look at other players on the team as well, you know, as far as what they can do to you. So it's going to be a tough game. The Jets have defeated the Islanders once at the beginning of the season. And then you guys remember the 3 weeks ago in New York, the Islanders handled the Jets pretty well, and I think you're not going to be able to have the performances that you had in that game. You're going to have to stay out of the penalty box, and that's what they did against the Hurricanes. I think they did that very well, and I think this is another team that you don't want to get into the penalty box because they have a very good power play.
They do, and we'll break that down later, as you're exactly right. We talked about last change before.
Right.
Claude Noel, to me, has to really be diligent about that today. Excuse me, because this Tavares line is going to get the ice time. And you have to make sure you're not getting Postman Stewart out against this line once in a while, because that's when they'll just go to town.
They'll just beat him up along the boards.
Well, I mean, Stewart's good along the boards, and Postman's not a small guy, but Postman's not exactly the most defensive adept player in the league.
Right.
And this line can beat you with size, skill, and shooting. And Tavares, I think people don't understand. Tavares has improved his skating, but Tavares, for a skilled player with great hands and a shooter, and can pass, he goes to the net and he'll stand, and he's mean. Like, this guy is arguably a top five NHL player, and he could win the Hart Trophy this year, and rightfully so. Like, I think people need to understand how good this guy is. To me, he's a shoe-in for the Olympics, and he could single-handedly get this, not single-handedly, but be the biggest factor why this team drives into the playoffs. And I'm not sure the Jets can handle him if they don't get the right matchups today. And it'll be interesting also, you know, we talk about defensive matchups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are the Jets going to opt to go head-to-head, first line to first line, is an interesting question. Because if you're playing defense as a five-man unit, who is going to be the forward line? I mean, last year they employed the GST line a lot against teams like that. What will happen today in terms of the forward matchups? That'll also be something interesting.
I would think it's got to be, I mean, based on the words that Claude Noel has said, is that, you know, the Tangrady Burmistrov Santarelli line is his, you know, shutdown forward grouping. That's what he said for the last, you know, week or 10 days. He's sort of deployed them, especially mm-hmm. Alex Burmistrov, mm-hmm. as your job. I don't, you know, obviously, you know, we'd prefer you to score, but your job is to more so go out there and shut down the opponent. And there's,
I like that role for him. By the way,
I think that role right now at this point in his career, that's probably what he's very well suited for.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I mean, usually, you know, these guys come in, these young players, and they don't necessarily have the commitment to defense. Alex Burmistrov has had that commitment for much of the last 2 years. So if the offense isn't there yet for whatever reason, maybe they need to get bigger and stronger, or you know, needs to be sort of make the simpler plays in the offensive zone, but he's solid defensively, just tell him, don't worry so much about the offense. Go out there
yep.
and shut down John Tavares. That's your job. Go out there and shut down, you know, Matt Molson. That is what we want from you right now. To me, and I'm going to ask you this question, it sort of segues nicely, he's my X factor of a forward in this game. If you have to pick one guy whose sort of contributions that you might not notice on the score sheet will result in, you know, one of the teams winning. Flip that over to you. Who's your X factor?
I think that's a fair point, Drew. I think that's absolutely a fair point. I think Burmistrov will do a lot of the same things as, you know, Nielsen can do for the Islanders. To me, the X factor is John Tavares. But I totally see your point in terms of Burmistrov being the X factor today. And, of course, the Jets have been on fire their first line. So is it Ladd? Is it Wheeler? Is it Little? But I really do think that's going to be interesting to see the five-man unit they employ. And conversely, the five-man unit that the Islanders employ against the team that Ezzie mentioned, the line that Ezzie mentioned, has been absolutely on fire lately.
Well, you guys gave your X factor. I'll give the Ez factor. For me, the Ez factor is Evander Kane. He hasn't been particularly good in the last two games. He was really good against the Panthers and really good against at the beginning of the homestand. And I think he's a guy who was successful when we were in New York last year. He had the fight and he had the goal against the Islanders. He's been really good against the Islanders. I think he gets up for playing against John Tavares because they're a similar age. So I think that he's a guy that I think is a guy to look out for in this game because he always gets his chances. But you know, Evander Kane had that one chance where he didn't see Wellwood in front of the net there, if you remember, in the second period, and you know he was getting criticized a lot. So for me, he's a guy that I expect to step up big time in this game. But you know, it's Richie mentioned John how good John Tavares is, and I think Richie is right. I think people, you know, they say, oh yeah, no, Tavares has been good. But no. This is like one of the best hockey players in the world right now, and he has the ability to dominate like Sidney Crosby. Yeah. He has that ability, and he makes these players better. You know, we talked about Brad Boyes earlier, you know, on the NHL Midweek show. Brad Boyes is getting a lot of pain on that line. Right. I mean, no offense to Brad Boyes, but, you know, John Tavares is that good that he's getting a lot of assists off of Tavares' goals, and that's not to take anything away from him. Just Tavares is that dominant. But, you know, back to my point earlier, I really think that the Islanders should be given credit for being more, of a four-line team, as the Jets should be. I mean, kudos to Chevy for going out and getting Santarelli, and Tangrady and Santarelli and Burmistrov, that line has been great. I mean, Drew, you mentioned it. I don't think that can be understated. A third line should be the type of line that can shut down the other team's top players and contribute offensively. Now, Santarelli and Tangrady, they haven't been lighting it up offensively by any means. Neither is Burmistrov. Burmistrov's having a horrible season offensively. But what they're doing is they're playing their roles very well. Some nights, you know what? They don't need to score. If Ladd, Little, and Wheeler are getting 6 points every night, they don't need to score. So, I mean, this is going to be a very... I think you're going to see a chess match, really, as far as matchups go. And Richie mentioned Bogosian. I think Bogosian has developed so well defensively. And, you know, he's another guy to key on. But, you know, he's turning into a shutdown defenseman. And it's really impressive to watch.
Let me interrupt you there, Ezzy. We're going to talk about defense after this commercial break. Let's go to it. You're listening to TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're breaking down the Isles and the Jets. It's past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers. Gentlemen, we spoke about the forward groups. Let's flip it over to the defensive groups. And you look at the Islanders' defense, and, you know, it's sort of a more solid group than you might think. Mm-hmm. You know, you sort of thought Islanders, and you don't really think much in terms of there. But you know, Travis Hamonic turning into a very good player.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Lubomir Vishnovsky is a little bit older, but he's certainly an NHL defenseman.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
And Mark Streit on the back end as your third pairing left side defenseman, and that's not too shabby. Now the guys they have playing with those three aren't the greatest. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Thomas Hickey, you know, who played his first NHL game against the Jets earlier this year in Winnipeg, has been okay. He can be exploited, but he's been okay.
Yeah, he moved the puck and skate.
Yeah. Matt Karkner is big.
That's about it. I mean, he's big and he's not going to be a proficient puck mover.
Right.
He's big and he's mean.
Yeah, he's big and he's mean, and you're going to know that he's there when you play against him. And McDonald, a guy who they got off of waivers and then signed to a four-year contract, has sort of fit in there nicely with Travis Hamonic. They've been playing well together as a pairing.
You mentioned Andrew McDonald. If you look, he's their ice time leader. Andrew McDonald and Travis Hamonic are their shutdown pair, and they've done a good job. I mean, you're talking about a team that's going against, you know, the likes of the Boston Bruins, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they're beating these teams. I mean, these guys are doing a good job. Travis Hamonic is, in my opinion, one of the most underrated defensemen. Maybe he's not underrated in New York. We can talk to Arthur Staple about that. But the guy is a very good defenseman. Everyone remembers at the beginning of the year, Travis Hamonic and Evander Kane were going at it. Yep. Travis Hamonic loves the physical style of game. And, you know, he can contribute offensively once in a while, but he's, you know, not the best offensive defenseman. He's your classic kind of stay-at-home guy. But the Islanders are pretty good defensively. And, you know, Richie, Drew mentioned Matt Karkner and Thomas Hickey, you know, the guys on their bottom pairing. You know, those are, to me, guys that you can exploit. We've talked about that before at the beginning of the season. Thomas Hickey's a guy that a bigger player can dominate down low, and Karkner's a slower guy that if a guy like Blake Wheeler is able to use his speed against a guy like that. But, you know, as far as the Islanders go defensively, they're helped a lot by their best defenseman. That's Evgeny Nabokov. He's another guy that, you know, a lot of people haven't talked about this year around the NHL. He's played, 37 or 38 games. I don't know what it is right now. He's up there, and he's been excellent.
We'll break down the goaltending coming up next segment.
He's been very good, and, you know, the Islanders might not be, you know, have the most, big names on defense, but they're pretty mobile and pretty physical as well, and they're not a pushover by any means.
McDonald was a draft pick by them, Drew. He wasn't waived.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Jets defense, because Claude Noel made a change in the defensive pairings last game. Usually you expect to see Bogosian and Hainsey, and Byfuglien, had been with Klitson before, and Enstrom when he's healthy. And then Claude Noel decided to go Byfuglien and Hainsey, Bogosian and Klitson, keeping Postman Stewart together as your 5-6 pairing. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on that move? Did you like the decision by Coach Noel?
Yeah, I didn't mind it. I think what you get with Klitson and Bogosian, you get a little bit of a mix, maybe gives Klitson a little bit more offensive freedom. And I think, you know, Klitson has been pretty good offensively, moving the puck here and scoring even. With Byfuglien, you have to always second-guess yourself because he's so poor defensively, and he may be jumping up. With Bogosian, he will pick his spots, but he's not a guy who always goes for the offense, and he picked a spot last game with a great goal, and he will jump into the play off the rush. But overall, you know, your Klitson, you can have a little bit more confidence in, A, if you pinch, the guy behind you is better defensively than Byfuglien, and B, you don't have to worry about Bogosian really going full bore in the offensive zone all the time. So I don't mind that. With Hainsey, you know, I think that's what they're trying to get at, because with Hainsey is more of a stay-at-home guy. He's not going to join the rush if ever. And with Byfuglien, obviously, he's always looking to join the rush or lay the big hit. So I do think the pairings here were a nice move by Claude Noel and Charlie Huddy.
Well, and Richie, they were doing a good job against the Carolina Hurricanes up until the third period. I thought they played pretty well. I mean, they didn't play a perfect game by any means, but Alexander Semin got that goal, and, you know, Tuomo Ruutu had the two goals. But I thought that generally, I mean, Grant Klitson has been a polarizing guy as well for the Jets. He's a guy they obviously picked up off of waivers, and he's made some mistakes. But I like Grant Klitson. I think that, you know, I don't know if I necessarily like him playing 25 minutes in the top pairing with Zach Bogosian, but I think he has done a good job when they're asking him to play those minutes, and I think he's done a pretty good job.
I agree with you.
I think that, you know, he has gotten better. If I look at one guy that I think has improved the most on the team, it's Grant Klitson. And I think that, you know, you have to be careful with him, but Zach Bogosian, I think of one play, and I commented to Richie about this in the press box. Zach Bogosian on Eric Staal, and Eric Staal, in my opinion, was the best player on the ice, even though he didn't get a goal. I don't even think he got a point on Thursday night, but I love Eric Staal. But I think that if you look at one play, it was in the second period, I believe.
Yeah.
Eric Staal's coming down on Zach Bogosian on the right side. Zach Bogosian just read the play perfectly, took out Eric Staal along the boards, and then got the puck. And it was such a simple play I mean, but it's Eric Staal you're talking about here. Eric Staal goes around, eats up defensemen for lunch, and I think Bogosian, to me, really had a great game. And, you know, Klitsam, I think, feeds off of Bogosian maybe a little bit more than Byfuglien. Because you made a good point, Richie. Byfuglien isn't good defensively. He just isn't. And he struggles big time. And I think that, you know, Klitsam has a little bit more of a difficult time reading off of Byfuglien. And then you put Hainsey with Byfuglien, and Hainsey's more of a veteran. He's got more NHL experience than Klitsam. Hainsey's able to, you know what Byfuglien's going to do, not pinch as much. And you know what, guys? It's fine if guys like Bogo and Byfuglien pinch if you have a guy that's going to cover for them. And I think at times, you know, it's been a carousel of defense pairings for the Jets. You've had so many different pairings, and without Enstrom in the lineup, Richie, you've mentioned this how many times? When Enstrom's not in the lineup, you really have to move all of these parts around, and they've struggled to find solid pairings. And I think that with the results from the last two games, they've played pretty well, and even going back to the beginning of the homestand. So I think that you should probably expect the defense pairings to stay the same this afternoon.
Yeah, I would expect them to stay the same, and we talked about matchups being important. You know, looking at the Islanders' defense, Hamonic, McDonald are going to be locked down against the Little Wheeler line, because the Jets are just as much of a one-line team as the Islanders are. If you look at their second and third pairings, you know, you look at Vishnovsky and Hickey. Smaller guys can move the puck. Vishnovsky is obviously better at moving the puck than Hickey. He's one of the best puck movers in the NHL. He's very good at getting the puck, making that quick turn and that quick pass. He's really quick at his decisions, and he can obviously can play really well in the power play as well. But that is a line. If you look at the second line of the Jets, and if you say that's going to be the matchup, second line of the Jets has absolutely no chemistry. It's appalling. But Kane, Jokinen, and Wellwood. Kane and Jokinen are big players. Both of them are big. And you look at Vishnovsky and Hickey, they're not. You know, if that is the pairing today, we'll ask Arthur Staple next segment. But if that's the pairing, I mean, Kane and Jokinen should be killing that line on the boards. And then Wellwood can kind of be the safety high third man in the zone. That's what should happen. That line, that would be a key. If the Jets could get some offense from those two guys, that would be such a bonus, because it's been, you know, Kane has had a solid year, but I wouldn't say he's taking a step forward this year. I wouldn't say he's taking a step backwards either, and I certainly think he needs somebody to play with. But having said that, one thing about that quickly, he needs somebody to play with, and I think we all understand that. But one thing to note, Evander Kane is not an easy player to play with either. Now, Olli Jokinen isn't somebody that anybody really has had great chemistry with. Kane is difficult to play with in a sense, you know, because he's not a great passer, and he's not like a Steven Stamkos one-time slapshot guy. He needs that puck on his stick a little bit, and he's not a great passer, and he's fairly one-dimensional. So when people talk all about, oh, we need a center, it's not like you can pick any center off the grid and say, okay, he'd fit really well with him, aside from the top Crosby guys. It's more difficult than that.
No, Richie, just quickly, and I mean, we'll talk about this more and more, you know, if the Jets make the playoffs or in the offseason, I think Kane needs a quicker guy to play with him. I think Jokinen is not a quicker player.
Yeah.
And I think you need someone that's as fast and that can keep up with him more. And I think that's what you see. You see, Evander Kane is a north, south, east, west. He's all over the place. He's shooting from everywhere. Richie wrote a really good article for those that remember it last year, where Evander Kane scored his 30 goals last year. It's all over the ice. Yep. He can score anywhere, and he shoots from anywhere. That's why he's second in the league in shots. Yeah. So you're right, Richie. He is a difficult player to play with. And let's be honest, you know, this is, you know, a repeat of what Richie just said. Jokinen's had an awful year. I mean, you can't mince words. He's got the worst plus minus on the team. He hasn't been scoring. Hasn't been doing much.
Been awful.
You can't argue with that, can you?
No. I don't think anybody would disagree. I mean, yeah, he's been awful. Exactly right. Then I mean, the Jets, and you know, from the outset, you said you didn't like the pairing of Jokinen and Kane together because they're both sort of shoot first guys, and it hasn't worked out. Obviously, now they're already too far down the road to change things up at this point in time.
I don't think so, but yeah.
Well, I mean, there's four games left in the regular season. You're not going to break up Ladd, Little, Wheeler.
I'm not saying break up that line. I've said it before, but that line has been great, and you can't break that line up now.
You're right. Moving Jokinen or moving somebody up, because I mean, Burmistrov is getting the power play time with Kane now.
Well, that's the only option you really have. You only have a certain amount of guys that play center, and he's got more speed than Jokinen. But again, Burmistrov's not really a natural playmaker, and it hasn't. So I mean, you've got you've got problems there. Well, probably something that needs to be addressed in the offseason.
I would agree with you there, because Burmistrov seems to be embracing the,
shutdown
role that he's been playing the last week.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Jets mess with that at this point in time. He gets his power play time, but his responsibility, he knows Claude Noel is counting on you to go out there and shut down John Tavares and Matt Molson and the Isles' top players tonight. Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday. He's going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.